Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hi there, Herman and Corin. So I'd love to chat today about a workflow that I've wanted to implement for quite some time. And I think it's going to really help me. And implementing it is actually the easy part, the technical part. I've already kind of mapped out a workflow for what I'm going to describe. So what I'm actually asking you guys is, because I'm just one person with an idea that I suspect much more people who have much more experience in productivity have probably sketched out this idea very well. And therefore, before I go ahead and create the technical plumbing to make this work, I might be able to integrate some lessons from them. Here's the idea. So I've kind of been thinking lately about ways to improve my workflow. When you are a consultant or working for yourself, you have a lot of latitude in how you can go about working, especially when you're working from home. It becomes very easy, especially these days where my wife and I are raising a young child, that when you finally get a sliver of time to actually work on things, even if it's late at night and not the best hours, you say that you kind of think, well, this is my time. I'm gonna go for it. Or you're in the middle of something and you're in this state that we call flow, which I love, and we should certainly talk about the flow state in future discussions. And you kind of say, I don't want to stop now, because if I stop now, I think I've talked about my own sort of neurotype for productivity, which is very much very flow centric and very not great with dealing with major disruptions when I'm really in the midst of working on something. I mentioned having ADHD and a bunch of episodes because I think it's relevant that some people are very springy. They can kind of switch their attention over to something. They can change context entirely, meet friends for coffee, get back to work. For me, it's like there is work and there's leisure. And I wouldn't even drink a beer and continue working. I have a strict no alcohol at the desk policy. And that's actually not just because I'm in any way a teetotaler. In fact, I enjoy the odd drink, but it's actually because for me that just my brain just drifts out of work mode and I can't get it back. So I used to work in startups where, you know, people would routinely pull out a beer from the office and just like have it at their desk, and I could never work like that. It would be fun to, but my brain just wouldn't. It would be a waste of time for me. So the tactic that I'm looking to master is when you've got a lot of things going on. Rome isn't built in a day. We've talked about the Kaizen philosophy before. Because I kind of struggle with the kind of start and stop of the workday, and the middle is where I kind of thrive and make progress. But sometimes I don't want to stop simply because I figure if I stop what I'm doing now, I'm not going to remember where I was. And to get back here and to get this kind of flow back is going to be hard. So my idea for hacking my neurology, if you will, was to create a workflow whereby at the end of the workday, whenever, let's say it's break time, the day's over, I record a voice note, and this is another use for voice tech, which I've become so enthusiastic about, detailing in a kind of a structured fashion what I'm working on, what are the blockers, where do we want to pick up tomorrow? And in the workflow that I've modeled in N8N, runs that through a transcription pipeline and then sends it to me actually the next morning so that it doesn't even send it to me straight away. So it puts it in a Google Doc saying, start of day, here was the retrospective from the previous day. Here are the priorities for today. Here is what, et cetera. So it's kind of to create that continuity between that I think would be really helpful for me to step back knowing, actually, I got everything down. It's all there. When I turn on my computer tomorrow, I'm going to know exactly going to be reminded exactly what I was working on, exactly what I want to pick back up on, so that there's kind of continuity of effort. So Herman and Corin, that's my plan. That's my idea. And I'd like to turn it over to you to enlighten me with any authors who really created systems for this. And maybe I can integrate that into my little system. The only productivity author that I've really read and really connected with me is David Allen and Getting Things Done, or GTD, because one of the things that to me was like he was speaking directly to me, was that getting information down is key. If you have an idea, again, this is why voice for me has been transformative. And then he talks about collection systems and getting those later, but just even if it's a voice recorder, like the old school ones we mentioned in our privacy episodes, or it's a phone, or it's a napkin, and you can photograph the napkin, worry about the capture later and just get the idea down now. And that's something that I've already kind of used, even subconsciously, and I find it really helpful. So Herman and Corin, let's talk about rituals for ending the workday for those like me who maybe keep working longer than they should or longer than they planned because they don't want to break and they don't really feel they've got a good mechanism in place for writing where they finished, writing where they can pick off. What are some good ways, approaches to do this that I can integrate into the workflow that I'm building out? Herman and Corin, let's talk about productivity and continuity between workdays. Over to you.
You know, Herman, I was thinking about that feeling you get when you are right in the middle of a project and you know you have to stop for the day, but your brain is screaming at you to keep going. It is like trying to pause a movie right at the climax. You are afraid that if you walk away, you will lose the thread, and tomorrow morning you will be staring at the screen like it is written in a foreign language. I had this happen last Tuesday while I was researching the history of urban planning in ancient Mesopotamia. I was deep in the irrigation maps, and my partner told me dinner was ready. I felt this physical resistance, like my brain was a car going 60 miles per hour, and someone just pulled the emergency brake. I spent the whole dinner thinking about canals instead of the lasagna.
Oh, I know that feeling all too well. It is the classic cliffhanger, and it is actually a sign of your brain being in a high engagement state. My name is Herman Poppleberry, by the way, for anyone just joining us for episode 298. And you are spot on, Corn. That anxiety about losing your place is a huge driver of burnout, especially for people who work from home where the physical office door never actually closes. Our housemate Daniel actually sent us a prompt about this very thing today. He is a consultant, he works from home, and he has been very open about his struggles with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. He is looking for a way to create some continuity so he can actually shut down his brain at night without feeling like he is sabotaging his future self. He calls it the transition tax, and for someone with his neurobiology, that tax is incredibly high.
Right. And Daniel has this really interesting plan to lower that tax. He wants to record a structured voice note at the end of every day. He will talk about his progress, any blockers he hit, and what the immediate next steps are. Then, he is going to have that transcribed and sent back to him the next morning as a sort of start of day retrospective. I think it is a brilliant use of automation, but it also raises some fascinating questions about how we process information and how we can effectively hand off tasks from our evening brain to our morning brain. It is like he is building a bridge over the gap of sleep.
It is a great idea, and it taps into some really deep psychological principles. We should really dig into why this is so effective, especially for the neurodivergent brain, and what experts say about these kinds of rituals. Because, let us be honest, the transition from work mode to home mode is one of the hardest parts of the modern workday. For someone with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, this is not just a productivity issue, it is a regulation issue. Dr. Coast. William Dodson, who is a leading expert in this field, talks about how the attention deficit hyperactivity disorder brain has an interest-based nervous system rather than an importance-based one. When Daniel is in the zone, his brain is flooded with dopamine because the task is interesting or urgent. Stopping that flow feels like a literal crash.
That makes so much sense. If your brain is fueled by interest, then stopping when you are interested feels like running out of gas in the middle of the highway. So, let us start with the psychology of it. Why is it so hard to just stop? I have heard you mention something called the Zeigarnik effect before. Does that apply here?
Absolutely. The Zeigarnik effect is this psychological phenomenon where our brains remember uncompleted or interrupted tasks much better than completed ones. It is named after Bluma Zeigarnik, a Soviet psychologist. She noticed that waiters could remember complex orders that were still in progress, but as soon as the bill was paid, the information just vanished from their minds. Recent research also highlights the Ovsyankina effect, the strong urge to resume an interrupted task which is very real. For someone like Daniel, his brain is essentially keeping those tabs open in the background. If he does not have a formal way to close those loops, his brain keeps them running like a computer program that will not quit. That uses up cognitive energy and makes it impossible to fully relax.
So, by recording this voice note, Daniel is essentially paying the bill at the restaurant. He's telling his brain, "I have captured this. You can let it go now." He is closing the tab so the computer can finally go into sleep mode.
Exactly. He is externalizing his executive function. For people with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, that internal filing system can be a bit chaotic because of challenges with working memory. By putting it into a structured recording, he is creating an external hard drive for his thoughts. But there is a specific way to do this that makes it even more powerful. Cal Newport, author of Slow Productivity 2024, talks extensively about the shutdown ritual. He literally says the phrase "shutdown complete" at the end of his day. It sounds a bit cheesy, but it is a powerful mental trigger. In his work, Newport emphasizes that knowledge work is never truly done, so you have to create an artificial finish line. Daniel's voice note is that finish line.
I like that. It is like a verbal anchor. But Daniel's plan goes a step further by actually providing the content for the next morning. It is not just about stopping, it is about starting. I am curious about the continuity aspect. There is a famous piece of advice from Ernest Hemingway about how he used to finish his writing sessions. Have you heard of that one?
Yes, the park on a downhill technique. Hemingway would always stop writing when he was going well and when he knew what was going to happen next. He would not wait until he was stuck or out of ideas. By stopping when he had momentum, he made it incredibly easy to start again the next day because he already had the first few sentences in his head. Daniel's voice note is basically a high-tech version of that. He is leaving himself a trail of breadcrumbs. But for a consultant, those breadcrumbs need to be very specific. Research from Gloria Mark at the University of California, Irvine, shows that it takes an average of about 23 minutes to get back into a task after an interruption. Daniel is trying to hack that recovery time.
That is a great analogy. But I wonder, if you are stopping mid-flow, does that voice note need to be more than just a summary? If I am a consultant like Daniel, and I am deep in a complex spreadsheet or a strategy deck, just saying I worked on the deck might not be enough to get me back into that state of flow the next morning. What should he actually be saying in those recordings to make them most effective?
That is a great question. If he wants to truly capture the state of flow, he needs to record what Tiago Forte calls intermediary packets. Tiago is the guy behind Building a Second Brain. The idea is that instead of trying to finish a whole project, you focus on finishing a small, discrete piece of work, a packet. In the voice note, Daniel should be very specific. Instead of saying, "I finished the report," he should say, "I finished the competitive analysis section, and the next step is to pull the pricing data from the April 2025 report. I have left that tab open on the second monitor." This is what Forte calls a bridge of knowledge. It is about capturing the context, not just the result.
So, specificity is the key to reducing the friction of starting. It is about reducing the cognitive load of the first task of the day. I have noticed that for me, the hardest part of the morning is deciding where to begin. If the decision is already made for me by my past self, it is much easier to get moving. It is like having a personal assistant who knows exactly what I was thinking 10 hours ago.
Precisely. There is also a concept from the world of software development called leaving a broken test. When developers leave a project for the night, they will sometimes leave a deliberate small error in the code that they know exactly how to fix. Fixing that small thing gives them an immediate win the next morning and pulls them right back into the context of the work. Daniel could do something similar in his note. He could say, "I have drafted the first 3 bullet points for the executive summary, and I know exactly what the 4th one needs to be. It is about the transition from the private sector to the public sector." Starting with that one bullet point is a low-stakes way to re-engage. It is a dopamine bridge.
I love that idea of a low-stakes win. It builds confidence right away. Now, let us talk about the timing. Daniel mentioned sending the transcription to himself the following morning. Is there a danger there? I am thinking about the morning routine. If I wake up and the first thing I see is a wall of text about work, does that ruin the morning transition? We are recording this on January 27th, 2026, and I feel like our digital boundaries are thinner than ever.
That is a very valid concern. The morning is often when people with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder have the most clarity before the distractions of the day set in. If he gets that email at 8 in the morning while he is still having coffee with his family, it might trigger an amygdala hijack, that sudden spike of work stress, too early. One piece of advice might be to have the system hold the delivery until a specific time, like 15 minutes after he usually starts his workday. Or, better yet, he should not look at it until he is actually sitting at his desk with his first cup of work coffee. He needs to protect his home zone.
Right. Keep the boundaries firm. Work stays in the work zone. I also think the medium of voice is really important here. We have talked before about how different types of input affect our brains. Speaking your thoughts aloud is a different cognitive process than writing them down. It is more generative. You often discover what you are thinking while you are saying it. It is like you are externalizing the internal monologue.
That is so true. It is called the rubber ducking effect in programming. You explain your problem to a literal rubber duck on your desk, and in the process of explaining it, you often find the solution. For Daniel, recording that voice note might actually help him solve a blocker he did not even realize he was stuck on. He might start the recording saying he is stuck, and by the end of the 2-minute note, he has talked himself into a solution. And since he is using Ayton and Ayton for the automation, he can actually use some of the newer AI agents that were released earlier this month.
Wait, tell me more about the tech side. Daniel mentioned Ayton for the plumbing. For our listeners who might not know, Ayton is an open-source workflow automation tool. How would he actually build this in 2026?
It is much easier now than it was even 2 years ago. He could use a mobile app to record the audio, which then uploads to a cloud folder. That triggers an ADN workflow. He can use OpenAI's Whisper Large V3 for the transcription. It is incredibly fast and accurate. Then, he can pass that text through an advanced model like GPT-5. He can prompt the AI to not just transcribe, but to structure the note into his specific template. It can remove the filler words, highlight the blockers in red, and even suggest a first task based on his next steps. It turns a messy brain dump into a professional briefing.
That is incredible. It is like having a chief of staff who only works for 2 minutes a day. But I want to push on the structure of this voice note. Daniel mentioned a structured fashion. What does that structure look like? If we were to design a template for him, what would be the mandatory fields?
Okay, let us build the Daniel template. First, I think he needs a section for emotional context. This sounds a bit touchy-feely, but for productivity, it is huge. If he says, "I am feeling really frustrated with this client because they keep changing the scope," that gives his morning self context for why he might be procrastinating on that task. He can acknowledge the frustration and move past it. It prevents the wall of awful that many people with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder face when a task feels emotionally heavy.
That is a great point. It is like a mood log for work. What else?
Second, the immediate next action. Not a goal, but an action. Not write the proposal, but open the proposal template and save it as client name underscore proposal. The smaller and more physical the action, the better. Third, the status of blockers. Is he waiting on an email? Does he need a password? If he writes down exactly what he is waiting for, he does not have to spend 20 minutes the next morning trying to remember why he cannot move forward. And finally, the big win of the day.
I love the big win. We are often so focused on what is left to do that we forget what we actually accomplished. For someone with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, that hit of dopamine from acknowledging a win can be really motivating. Even if it is just, "I finally cleared out those 40 unread emails." It changes the narrative from what I failed to do to what I succeeded in doing.
Exactly. So, the structure is emotional context, immediate next action, blockers, and big win. That is a very solid framework. And because he is using Ayton, he can have this formatted as a beautiful bulleted list in his email or even pushed to a Notion page. But there is a second order effect here I want to explore. If Daniel starts relying on this system, Does he lose the ability to hold things in his head? Is there a risk of cognitive atrophy?
That is a common worry with any productivity tool, but I think the opposite is actually true. By offloading the rote memorization of tasks, he is freeing up his prefrontal cortex for the high-level strategic thinking that he is actually being paid for as a consultant. It is like using a calculator. You do not lose the ability to understand math, you just stop wasting time on long division, so you can focus on calculus. Especially with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, the working memory is often the bottleneck. If you can bypass that bottleneck, you unlock a lot of potential. You are not replacing your brain, you are augmenting it.
That makes sense. I am also thinking about the long-term data here. If Daniel does this every day for a year, he has an incredible archive of his work life. He can look back and see patterns. Maybe he realizes he is always frustrated on Tuesdays, or that his biggest wins always come after he takes a walk at lunch. In 2026, we can feed those 365 transcriptions into a large language model and ask it to identify his most common productivity killers. It turns a daily ritual into a long-term strategic asset.
Oh, the meta-analysis possibilities are endless. He could even use it to generate his monthly client reports. Instead of trying to remember what he did 3 weeks ago, he just asked the AI to summarize the big wins from the last 20 days. It reminds me of something James Clear talks about in Atomic Habits. He says that we do not rise to the level of our goals, we fall to the level of our systems. Daniel is building a system that supports him when his motivation or his focus naturally dips.
And that is the key, isn't it? Motivation is a fair-weather friend. It is there when things are easy, but it disappears when you are tired or overwhelmed. A system like this is like a safety net. It catches you when you are having a bad day and gives you a clear path forward. I think it is also worth mentioning the work-life balance aspect again. We live in a world where work is always available. Our phones are in our pockets, our laptops are on our kitchen tables. If you do not have a clear end to the day, work just bleeds into everything. It is the erosion of the boundary.
It really is. In the past, when people worked in factories or on farms, the end of the day was dictated by the clock or the sun. When the whistle blew or the sun went down, you were done. Physical labor has a natural stopping point. Knowledge work is infinite. There is always one more email you could send or one more slide you could tweak. Creating a deliberate, artificial stopping point like this voice note is a way of reclaiming that boundary. It is a psychological fence. It protects Daniel's time with his young child.
I like that. A psychological fence. It protects your personal life from the encroachment of work. If he is still thinking about a client's budget while he is playing with his kid, he is not really present in either world. He is in that gray zone where he is not working effectively, and he is not relaxing effectively. It is the worst of both worlds. This ritual allows him to be 100% present with his family because he knows that everything he needs for tomorrow is safely stored in that transcription. He can trust the system.
So, we have talked about the structure, the psychology, and the tech. Are there any other experts we should mention? You mentioned Cal Newport and Tiago Forte. What about David Allen? Daniel specifically mentioned Getting Things Done, or GTD. How does this fit into that system?
David Allen is the grandfather of this stuff. His core mantra is that your mind is for having ideas, not holding them. The end of day voice note is a perfect example of a capture and clarify step in the Getting Things Done system. You are capturing the open loops and clarifying what needs to be done about them. The only thing I would add from a GTD perspective is that Daniel needs to make sure he actually reviews the note. A capture system only works if you trust that you will see the information again when you need it. If he records the note but then forgets to check the transcription, his brain will stop trusting the system and will go back to trying to hold on to everything. Trust is the fuel for the whole machine.
Right, the trust is the fuel. If the loop isn't closed, the anxiety returns. I also think there is something to be said for the ritualistic nature of it. It is not just a task, it is a ceremony. Maybe you should do it in the same place every day, or with a specific ritual like closing his laptop lid right after he stops the recording. Environmental cues are huge for the attention deficit hyperactivity disorder brain.
Yes, maybe he stands up, stretches, records the note, and then literally walks out of the room. That physical movement helps signal to the brain that the context has changed. It is like the psychological equivalent of commuting home from an office. It is the digital commute. I love that. You know, we have been talking about this in the context of attention deficit hyperactivity disorder and consulting, but honestly, I think almost anyone could benefit from this. I might start doing it myself.
I was thinking the same thing. I often find that my best ideas for the podcast come to me right as I am trying to fall asleep, because my brain is still chewing on whatever we discussed that day. If I could just dump those thoughts into a recording at 5 in the afternoon, maybe I would sleep better. There is actually research showing that writing down a to-do list for the next day helps people fall asleep faster than if they just journaled about their day. It is about that future-oriented closure. It calms the central nervous system.
It really does. And honestly, Korn, I would love to see your end-of-day transcripts. I bet they are full of weird tangents about sloth biology and ancient history. But you are right, it is about peace of mind. I am curious, though, if Daniel gets a blocker that he cannot solve in the moment, how should he frame that in the note? Sometimes a blocker isn't just a missing password, sometimes it is a conceptual wall. That is where the power of the subconscious comes in. In the note, he should frame it as a question. Instead of saying, "I am stuck on the strategy," he should say, "I am looking for a way to connect the marketing goals to the long-term sustainability plan. I do not have the answer yet, but that is the question I am working on." By framing it as a question, he is giving his subconscious mind a specific problem to work on while he is sleeping. There is a lot of evidence that our brains continue to process complex problems during rapid eye movement sleep. He might literally wake up with the answer. The voice note isn't just a record of the past, it is a prompt for the future.
This is becoming a very robust system. I am really impressed with how Daniel is thinking about this. It is a great example of using technology to support human cognition rather than just adding more noise. I think the key takeaway for Daniel, and for anyone else trying this, is to be kind to yourself. Some days the note will be long and insightful, and some days it will just be, "I am tired. I did my best. Start with the email from Sarah." Both are equally valid because they both serve the purpose of closing the day. Consistency is more important than perfection.
That is a great point, Korn. Even a 10-second note is better than no note at all, because it maintains the habit and the trust in the system. I also think it is worth mentioning that this doesn't have to be a perfect transcription. With modern large language models like the ones we have in 2026, you can have the system clean up the text, remove the ums and ahs, and even bullet point it for you. It makes the final result much more readable. Use the tech to do the heavy lifting so your brain doesn't have to.
I am really excited to hear how this works out for Daniel. It feels like a real game changer for his workflow. And for our listeners, if you are struggling with that work-life boundary or that feeling of losing your train of thought, maybe give this a try. You do not need a complex N18 setup to start. You can just use the voice memo app on your phone and listen to it the next morning. See if it changes how you feel when you shut down for the night.
Definitely. It is a low-cost experiment with a potentially high return. And hey, if any of you out there have your own versions of this ritual, or if you have found other ways to bridge the gap between work days, we would love to hear about them. You can always get in touch with us through the contact form on our website at myweirdprompts.com. We love hearing how people are hacking their own productivity.
Yeah, we really do. And while you're at it, if you're enjoying the show, we would really appreciate a quick review on your podcast app or on Spotify. It genuinely helps other people find us and helps us keep making these episodes. We have been doing this for over 290 episodes now, and it is still the highlight of my week to dive into these topics with you, Herman. Even after 298 episodes, there is always something new to learn.
It is a testament to the curiosity of our listeners and our friend Daniel. So, thanks again to Daniel for sending this in. It was a great one to explore. I think I'm ready to wrap this one up. I have a voice note of my own to record about our next episode on the psychology of digital clutter.
All right, I think that is a wrap on this discussion. I am going to go record my own voice note now. I have a lot of thoughts about what we should cover in episode 299. Shutdown complete.
Nice touch, Korn. Until next time, this has been My Weird Prompts. You can find us on Spotify and at our website, myweirdprompts.com. Thanks for listening, everyone. We will catch you in the next one.
Catch you later.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.